Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that will never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. It's over the bar.
Yes, hello there. You're very welcome along to the RTE GAA podcast. My name is Des Cahill. This week I'm joined as usual by my colleague Peter Sweeney from RTE Online Sport. Also with us, Wes Litley, editor of the Sunday Game, Kerry Football's Colm Cooper and Cork Hurling's Don Logue Cusick. And Don Logue, if I may, we'll start with you. Very disappointing defeat for the Cork Hurlers against Kilkenny. Lots of analysis, as there always is, I suppose, when Cork get beaten. But it's a long time now since there was an All Ireland title. Where is Cork hurling now?
Yeah, it was I suppose a big blow on Sunday, to be honest, Des. Straight after the game, I met Tomás Mulcahy and Donal O'Grady in the press box, and sometimes we mightn't see eye to eye on everything, but we were all as equally taken aback, to be honest, by the performance. Like Cork started well. Should have been up more at half time. Then the third quarter was a disaster, and other than a resistance, if you like, led by Patrick Horrigan and Alan Cadigan, you'd have to admit that Cork were well beaten, and I think it was typified in the number of Cork giving up almost 60% of their possession in the second half compared to 39% from Kilkenny. And Kilkenny had that spirit of what's mine is mine, and what's yours is mine also. But yeah, it was very disappointing, this.
What did you make of it, Peter?
Pretty much what Don Logue is talking about. They were in reasonably good shape at half time. I thought they'd win the match beforehand, but just the way they were steamrolled in the third quarter, I think it was 1-8 to a point they were outscored. You know, they just completely faded out of the game. And I think we might be talking about Patrick Horgan a little bit later on, but only for him, there wouldn't have been mapped at all. He got 2-2 from play. Without him, Alan Cadigan was pretty good, 4 points. But apart from that, up front, they had nothing. There's systematic problems there. It's not, this isn't laying the blame at John Myler's door, but this goes a long way back, and I'm sure Don Logue, he's touched on this many times, he might talk about it again now shortly. But Cork haven't won a 21 or under 20 titles since 98. They won Munster last year but lost the final then to Tip, the All-Ireland final. They haven't won a minor since 2001.
In the context of that match though, was it the case, Wes Litley, that they were up against a Kilkenny team that hasn't shone brightly and were beaten by Wexford and had question marks over themselves?
It probably isn't a massive surprise that they lost. Like, they were favourites, but they were marginal favourites and would have been the talk going into the game. I mean, you're never that surprised Kilkenny winning a match against anyone, but I suppose it was possibly confirmation of a lot of the suspicions people had about them, brought home to roost, really, in terms of, like, I think Anthony Daly's column in the Examiner on Monday was harsh, but that's what a lot of people are saying, that there's maybe a mental fragility there with this team. And, like, I've spoken to Donal about it before, and I'm not sure what way he sits on it, but, you know, I suppose there's a fear that it starts to become a bit of an albatross around your neck, this, the longer this gap goes on. And I was surprised at the lack of comment on Cork's, the weight since Cork's last All-Ireland until now, but it seems to have all come to the surface now. A county board meeting last night, people roaring for Myler to go. You know, you see Kieran Shannon's article during the week, Dermot O'Sullivan coming back at Anthony Daly with regards to those, you know, suggestions of flakiness. Yeah, I mean, it just seems like a few chickens have come home to roost on that front in the past few days, really.
But they don't look. Cork have come close to it, like, but for the save last year against Limerick, Cork could have been, you know, maybe should have been in the final. There's been small margins in recent years as well.
Yeah, look, Des, in fairness, what you're saying is correct, and amongst a lot of the top teams, the margins are small. But I think it's like, in reality, and Peter touched on it there, it's not the only defining factor of a successful adult team, we know that. But having successful underage teams that are used to winning, are used to beating the opponents that they're coming up against, are used to going to Croke Park and coming away with victories, hugely contributes to that winning mindset. I do think the ship has turned at underage level, right? There's been good work being put in at Rebel Org. We must admit, though, all of the competitions we've been winning are lesser competitions. Like, the real barometer of underage success is at minor and under 21, or what's now is under 20. And like Peter said, it's 2001 since that minor victory, and I was playing myself on the 97 and 98 teams when we won the under 21. The one thing I do, I suppose, and it's only my gut that I do worry about the Rebel Org is producing elite players. And like I said, there's a lot of good work going in. There's a lot of good thought influencers involved in that whole setup. Really good forward-thinking people. But I would say that the next step for that is to produce elite players. And I know Wes was mentioning there, maybe talk about Cork management and stuff like that. But I think there's two key roles that are going to be appointed in Cork over the next while that are possibly even more important. And that's there's a county underage secretary going to be appointed. But more important than that is there's a high performance manager going to be appointed in Cork. Now, that's a full-time role. And I think that's a real opportunity for that person to go in and transform the culture within the organisation. The only thing, and I have to say it,
would
is that...
Would that be aimed at adult level, Dougal?
It would be aimed at working with all managers, Des, but definitely would be working with the adult level managers and putting in place a consistent approach to skills development, strength and conditioning development. The only thing, when I do think of that, I remember back in the mid-2000s when we had a really good progressive group and management, that recommendation being made at that time to the board. And, you know, I just think of how we could be so further down the road if things like that were taken on at the time. But look, it's not a time for looking back. I think this person, this role, actually, I believe, this high performance manager is actually the most important appointment that Cork are going to make over the next while.
Can I ask, Donal, does that sound like you're saying that this is a long-term project? Cork, you know, mightn't win an All-Ireland for another couple of years, because we were just talking, Wes mentioned it there, it's 15 years now without an All-Ireland, 16 next year will be the joint longest Cork has ever gone without an All-Ireland. Are you kind of, are Cork people writing it off for the next couple of years, looking further down the line, would you say? Or what is your thoughts on that?
I don't think so, Peter. I think, look, we know enough about sport, right, to know, and I've been involved in enough teams myself in 1999 and seen other teams, that you're not going to write off Cork. Cork team going out next year, their intention is going to be to win the All-Ireland. But I do think it's a very important step in the right direction of long-term, real culture change and building for the future in terms of putting that performance manager in place.
Looking to the nearer future, Donal, do you think, are Cork going to be looking for a new manager in the short term, or will John Myler stay on and try and see this project a bit further down the line?
Yeah, look, Peter, you know yourself, I don't know that, right? Yeah. John is still in place, and you know, it'd be unfair of me to be commenting on it, to be honest.
That's fair enough.
Other than what I've already said, but John is still there. Afterwards, I believe that he said he wasn't going to make a decision. And you know what? I think that a manager's right to take their time, because it can be in a very emotional position straight away after a game for both players and management. And very often when there's a mic put in your face, it can be hard to keep that composure that's required. But I definitely think the right thing to do is to walk away and have a good think about it.
Even some of the critics need to have a think about it, because it's all very well, you know, we haven't won, he's had 2 years, we need to change it up or freshen it up and all. But when you think about it, are you going to freshen it up with different players? Is it just a different voice? You know, sometimes somebody can be brought into a team management and change the voice as well.
Look at, say, the Munster rugby team of the early 2000s. Like, sometimes it's just about staying in the fight till it turns your way to a point as well. And they probably made a semi-final against the Head 2 years ago under Kieran Kingston. In reality, even though they were disappointed not to go on, because they probably should have beaten Limerick last year, they consolidated what had happened the year before. So they've had a bad year this year. It's as Donal said, with fine margins. It's not to say they can't have a good year next year, you know. So I do think they need to slow the process down a bit.
Ways, there's only two teams, Wes, who've came out of Munster in the last 2 years. Do you know what I mean? So like that have came out. So that's
Cork both
and Limerick. Yeah, out in both years. And Cork did win the Munster Championship.
And they beat Limerick twice this year as well. You know,
there you go. Yeah.
Well, look, that's it then. Now, you, Wes Liddy, had something to say about Patrick Horgan and the hype. Like, 3-10 was a fantastic score.
Yeah, no, I'm not by any means trying to downplay his achievements or anything like that. And I've talked to this about Donal before, just in conversation. But I thought some of the... Obviously, the phenomenal game, and he's been a phenomenal player. No arguments.
There's a boat coming, yeah.
Well, the boat would be... I saw people literally saying he'd surpass Christy Ring in the pantheon of Cork hurlers. And I suppose it was a larger point I was making. It's not to have a go at Patrick Horgan or anything like that. But it was... I suppose to me, Patrick Horgan maybe has been a player who adorns a game rather than shapes a game. In terms of, like, if you look at someone like, say, Richie Hogan at his best a few years ago, or TJ Reid even, how they'll go out the field, win dirty ball, to use that expression. Like, give it to you any way you want it, basically. I suppose it just got me thinking that, you know, hurling is so nostalgic generally, and people talk about wristy hurlers and great stickmen and all this. And I think the definition of what constitutes a good hurler or a great hurler is changing rapidly in terms of, just to be give a hypothetical one, if you looked at, say, Kyle Hayes playing at centre-forward versus Tony Kelly playing at centre-forward. Now, I think everyone would probably agree that Tony Kelly is more God-given talent. But Tony Kelly has a great game. He goes out and gets 5 points from play. They might be wonder scores. But, I mean, Kyle Hayes might get 2 points, might set up 2 points, might win 6 puckouts, might run a decoy line for his teammates to win 4 more puckouts, might put in 15 tackles. I think we've always looked at hurling as a skill being the ultimate arbiter. But I think that balance between skill and athleticism and mental strength and all those other components that make a player is changing. And I think there's a prejudice towards almost the aesthetically pleasing player, which to me Patrick Horgan would be. But that doesn't mean he's the most effective player.
No, but isn't that in every sport, though? You love to see. I mean, that's not what you're paying
for. I think it's more romanticised in hurling than any others, yeah, to be honest.
I don't like saying this. I actually agree with Wes. But no, it's similar in Gaelic football. You know, the lad who used to take the high catch or kick the beautiful score was the main man. But then you had the likes of Paul Galvin come along and Paul Flynn, both brilliant footballers.
And football's been ahead,
yes,
tactically and in terms of strength and conditioning.
I would agree.
So it's no... It's not surprised that football's a few years ahead in that regard in terms, yeah, of how they're judging people.
Like those guys I mentioned had all the skills of the game, but they did so much more than previous generations of footballers.
Let's bring Colm Cooper in on this. Like, from a football...
The ultimate wristy hurler on the football field, you know?
What a hurler I was. Yeah, no,
By the way, sorry, just before you answer that, did you play hurling?
I just poked around this. Like, obviously, yeah, in Killarney, there isn't a whole pile of hurling, but obviously I was like every kid going around... with a hurley and a slitter, but only in my younger years. Right. I got 5 stitches when I was about 10, and that was into my hurling career, I'm afraid. But it just interestingly, Andy, I suppose, interesting on Wes's point, and I suppose Patrick Horgan, you know, he's extremely prolific, and I must admit, before I even go into this conversation, I'm an armchair hurling fan. I don't even claim to know as much about it as you guys. But to be the top elite player, you have to have all the facets in terms of mental strength, like reading of a game, scoring, and I get where the boys are coming from. Sometimes you can be lauded for just dipping in and out of the game by having amazing scores and amazing finishing and scoring tallies, but the really elite players across any sport, guys, they have everything: the mental strength, the resilience, the teamwork, and the best players in football and hurling sometimes are guys who roll up their sleeve and they make the guys around them 10% or 15% better. And that's how I would judge the really, really top elite players in any of those codes. And look, from what I've seen, Patrick Horgan is an amazing player for Cork, and scoring-wise, I suppose Wes's point, mentioning him in the same breath as Christy Ring and some players like that, look, that's open to opinion. But to be a true, true great at the game, I think you have to have all facets of the game. And I suppose opinion will always dictate that.
All right, Don Logue, your turn.
Yeah, look, I think beauty is in the eye of the beholder, right? It's like everything in terms of, you know, and I get Wes's point. It's a very interesting one, and like there's a couple of different aspects to it. It's, you know, what do we really appreciate in the game? I remember when Clare won the All-Ireland in 2013, I was totally, if you like, in love with the way they were playing the game, which for me was all about speed of wrist, speed of foot, eye, skill. And it was great to watch. Then, you know, in the years before that, we saw thunderous All-Ireland finals, if you like, between Tipperary and Kilkenny being involved, and Kilkenny came back the following year after 2013. And some people would have placed an appreciation on that. I would say though, like I definitely think now that there's less room within the modern player and the elite athlete for hiding. Right, I think that, you know, everybody, it's like the world in general, everybody's trying to get the maximum out of everyone all of the time, and it's the same, very much the same on the field. Long gone are the days when if the ball isn't in your area that you're not meant to be doing something. And like, I think in Patrick Horgan's case, he came onto the Cork squad while I was there. And a couple of things, like adding to what Cullum has said there, it was obvious that this guy had serious skill, but I would say that over the years he's just gotten better and better. And I do know one of the key reasons why he's got better and better, it's practice and commitment. And like, there's some things that there's no secret to. I think there's very few, like, I've come across very few geniuses in my life, right? But the best players are the best players because they work the hardest. And I think that he's an example from a hurling point of view in terms of why he's become so good, why he controls that hurley. Like, he's got an exceptional control over his stick in terms of his strike. The length of time it takes between him releasing the ball from his left hand and his hurley actually striking the ball is less than most players out there, and that comes from a control of the hurley, that's uncommon, really, is what I would say. But then again, back to the players that are not valued, I remember Timmy McCarthy playing with us in the all the ways up, and Timmy, if you ask the man in the street, you know, about most performances, Timmy always seemed to be on his case, because you know what, he didn't have those standout highlight moments. But we all know the one of the most valuable players that we had was Timmy Mac, because he kept the ball going, he was making the hard yards, he was making it hard for the opposition, probably a bit before his time even. And I remember as far back as when I was a kid being inside in the client dressing room and my own dad explaining to us as half forward, saying, look, you don't have to score to have a great game. You could have a great game in the half forward line by just doing your job and keeping the ball going and never score.
Yeah, you've raised one of my favourite topics with elite sports people is who's the most underrated that you've been with in any sport. It's always interesting to hear a player who's been in the battle with these people, you know.
Well, I'd be interested in all year answer to this, but to me, the most influential hurler of this decade, if you look at how he performed in big matches, the lengths his notoriously strict manager went to get him on the field in those matches, how poorly the team performed in his absence, would be Michael Fenley. But no one would say Michael Fenley was the best hurler of the last decade. I've actually heard some of his teammates say, wouldn't be a great hurler now. Whatever that means, that you're somehow divorcing skill with the stick from his actual impact on the match, which is preposterous, really, like, when you think about it.
That's the Timmy McCarthy thing, isn't it?
Yeah, well, he was probably more visible than Timmy McCarthy, got on more ball maybe than Timmy McCarthy. He was such a big, strong man, marauding, but, you know, another...
Can I disassociate myself with this guy? If I meet him, I'm going to meet him soon.
Well, Michael Fenley's an unbelievable hurler.
You should meet Timmy McCarthy in terms of his size, Peter. I think he'd surprise you.
But just talking about the most influential hurler of the last decade, maybe it's Joe Canning, because all those reasons you said, without him, look what they did this year, very, very little. He almost dragged them to it. Obviously, he had a lot of help, but it seemed in a way that the force of will dragged them to an All-Ireland title 2 years ago.
But just before we finish on Patrick Horgan, Don Logue mentioned the skill elements, but there is something with about it. A fella is on his knees.
He's phenomenal.
And he still has the composure in the high.
I'm not criticising Patrick Horgan. I'm just using it as a jumping point to a different conversation.
Yeah, and it was an interesting conversation.
I just think if you ask 9 out of 10 people on the street who's the best hurler in Ireland, they'd invariably throw up Seamus Callanan, TJ Reid, Patrick Horgan, Joe Canning. And like, with good reason. But they're all scoring stylistic forwards. No one's thrown up Lee Chin, Garrod Hegarty, who are possibly offering more utility to their team at this point.
Yeah, take your point fully.
And I bet you if you went into those dressing rooms, though, Wes, I bet you in terms of what the squads are placing a value on would be a lot of those attributes that you're describing there. And lest I let the opportunity pass, I think the media have a big role to play in that, right? In
who's
that
the most influential player this decade?
Right, in terms of, like, very often you see the whole narrative that's produced after games is around those types of those
scoring stars. Sure, it's past exactly. players who pick man of the match in the Sunday game, so I'm blaming them.
And Wes, you being the editor of the Sunday game, know a lot about that.
Yeah. I just do what I'm told.
But it is interesting how the backs on the Sunday game want to vote for the backs and the forwards. You know, maybe we've too many forwards on the Sunday game.
Don't even start on goalkeepers.
Colm Cooper, who are the underrated players that you have played with that maybe the public didn't give enough credit to?
Looking at it from a Kerry point of view, obviously two guys jumped to my mind straight away. Like, obviously Darragh O'Shea was one of the best midfielders Kerry produced maybe ever, but he always had a brilliant foil with him, and the two I think of straight away are William Kirby and Seamus Scanlon, from the point of view of they were brilliant players, never really got the attention like the boys are saying there. They'd never been mentioned too much in the paper after a big win, but they were very influential guys, and they were vital cogs in those teams. Look, every team you go around the country, there's unsung heroes everywhere, and that's the beauty of it. I think that's not going to change either, by the way. I think the star names are always going to take the shine and after big wins. But look, even if you look at someone, a team like Donegal and Michael Murphy and the influence he's had since he's come in and played at senior level, like, they would be a different team if he wasn't playing, you know. Peter Canavan when he was in Tyrone, those type of characters, they don't come along. They come along every now and again, but they command so much respect in dressing rooms. They just make things happen. We talked about Michael Finlay a little bit earlier. The big reason I think he did so well for Kilkenny and even in club and winning All-Ireland clubs is he made people better around him, and fellas felt more comfortable and secure when he was in teams with them. And that's what those top players really do. But the unsung heroes, certainly those two from Kerry that I mentioned. Look, you could go through every team in the country, but it's funny that Donal Logue would mention the media piece. I think that's very true. I think after the game, it's the marquee names that will get all the headlines, but it's those unsung heroes that get the job done in many cases.
Had you fellas in your dressing room, Colm, who never ever spoke, and then once or twice they came out and spoke and everyone went, what? And, you know, grabbed people's attention in the dressing room once in their career.
Ah, you would. Like, just even thinking like a Declan O'Sullivan, who probably outside of Kerry may have not got the recognition maybe that I felt he deserved. But, boy, when he spoke, people stood up and you'd listen. And just pure winners' days. And that's what all these top players have. They're winners. When they're in the trenches, they grab people around them and they bring them with them and get them over the line. And that's what real winners have. Like, Dublin have them in abundance in the football at the moment. They have, like, if you were to ask me who's Dublin's best footballer at the moment, I couldn't answer that, because there's so many good ones. And who's their most influential one? They don't have one. They have five, six, and seven guys that, you know. So it's they're in every team. Some teams have more of them than others, and probably the teams that you see competing for honours have a little bit more than everybody else.
Just when Bonner Maher got injured earlier this year with Tipperary, I was just ringing a few people who played with him to talk about him, and just what you said there, Des. Quiet as a mouse in the dressing room, very, very much kept himself to himself. But once in a while, he opened his mouth, and because of the way he plays the game, that way he works so hard for the team, the way he makes other players around him better. Whenever he opened his mouth in the dressing room, it was like everything stopped, and everyone was like, Bonner has something to say, be quiet, because it's worth listening to. And that's exactly what we're all talking about here, and just kind of follows on from what you were asking Colm there.
Well, anyway, Cork will not then be in the hurling final in August, but the hurling finals in August is a topic for conversation now. And Peter, you want the football and hurling finals back in September?
Well, I think both football and hurling finals, yes, they should both be moved back to their traditional slots in September. I know they've bounced around different weekends in September, but the first and the third weekend in September, I think, are All-Ireland final weekends. They're national days. The GAA moved them out of September to free up the month for club games. My colleague online, Declan Welly, did an audit last year of counties to see where they were in 2018 in September with regards to 2017. Half of the counties in football were behind their schedule. Almost the other half were the same. and only one, Waterford were ahead, and that was because Waterford, I think it was November or
that was
December.
Compared to when they were in September.
Yeah, exactly. In September 2017, hurling and football, or sorry, football, half were ahead and half were behind. So it didn't actually make any difference that they moved the All-Irelands out of September. If they move them back to September, there's still only four counties involved. There's 28 other counties that will be able to get on with their club programme. The season
is there a danger we'll get used to, or not a danger, is there a chance we'll get used to August finals if we just keep them in August?
Yeah, of course there is. You know, and people resist change. I resist change, so there's a danger that we're resisting it for the sake of resisting. But I think, I genuinely think it's a backward step to do this. The hurling teams have a fortnight between their quarterfinals and semifinals. The football teams don't. And that was a real shame, for Monaghan hadn't been in an All-Ireland football semi-final in 30 years before last year. And the players and the fans in particular didn't have a chance to enjoy it because it was a six-day
one
tournament.
One weekend into the next, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas if it was 2 weeks, people had organised themselves, you know, get the bunting up. People would enjoy it, and then the next week would be looking forward to the match, and you'd probably get a bigger crowd, I'd argue, as well, because people can organise themselves, you know, to get out of wherever they are living and to the match. I think that's a shame, and it's such a big part of the Irish summer, being from somewhere where your team is going well and being involved and getting behind them and things like that. All-Ireland finals in August. I know this year and last year the football has been the first weekend of September, but that was just a logistical thing. Next year they'll both be in August. People are on holiday still in August. The hurling final this year is the 18th of August. Half the country's on holidays. They're away at that stage. Another huge promotional opportunity is missed because if your county, if Dublin, Limerick, wherever, is in an All-Ireland final and the schools are back, sure, the schools are awash with colour, the kids are getting into it. That's gone now. And that's a huge promotional opportunity missed, I think, for the GAA as well. There's 20 odd extra games between hurling and football and compressed into a very, very tight frame. Time frame.
So would you start the championship earlier? Now we're getting into
now you're talking. Yeah, well,
that's the thing about it. Like, I've heard a few people in newspaper columns or wherever, like experts, you know, ex-players kind of asked about it, and there's kind of a line I've heard a few times. I was saying it to Peter earlier, the people go, it's not complicated, and you kind of go, well, hold on, it's pretty complicated when you start getting into it. So I agree with Peter completely on one hand, but I suppose you saw it with the hurling championship last year. There's also a great buzz to just being bombarded by classics every week. So, but like to go into a world I loathe in terms of marketing and PR, like how anyone could think it was a good move to move such a recognisably identified set date in the calendar that everyone associates with your game. To walk away from that. That's the thing most sporting organisations spend their lifetime craving to achieve.
And they're genuinely Ireland's day. You know what I mean? If you're a hurling person or a football person or both, those are their days marked out in your calendar all year. People come to Dublin just to be part of it.
There is an anti-climax sense about the 18th of August, I think, for sure. Whatever about the football, because it still has a toehold in September. But
well, it's the 1st of September, I think, is the actual date.
It is, yeah. And that's, again, logistical. Next year, it'll come back to August.
All right, let's get the views of the lads. Donal?
Yeah, I'd be, like, and I know this might sound parochial, but we are in a competition with other sports. We need to keep that in our minds all of the time. I can recall, when I was chairperson of the Gaelic Players Association, leaving Cork one morning and seeing a sign that said, "This is rugby country," right?
Did you try and take it down?
And I remember when I went into Croke Park that morning, right? It wasn't on the agenda, but yeah. I just felt compelled just to raise the point that I said, I know you're conscious of it, but if ever I saw an example of a competitor feeling confident enough to make a statement that they very obviously knew wasn't true themselves, but had gotten to a point where they felt they wouldn't be left out of court by putting it there. I made the point that we just need to be really conscious of that competitive aspect all of the time. And I think September was our month, and I wouldn't have given up that that space for anybody. Having said that, this is a result, though, of the people responsible for this are the GAA themselves, right? Because this is an effort to keep the people who are saying that the inter-county season is taking up too much of the year and the clubs are being impacted, etc. But you need to remember that the best advertising window and the best medium for advertising our games is the big inter-county games. And that point Peter made, I've spoken to a couple of teachers who actually made that point to me, that the buzz that was around the schools and the opportunity for the GAA to be being talked about in primary schools and so on when the All-Ireland finals were going on was huge, and is something that we've now lost to a certain degree.
Colm, your view on it?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a fan of September, guys. I know certainly in the All-Irelands I played in the lead-up, there was usually a month before it. Now, a month is probably too long of a build-up going into a big match, but certainly your two or three weeks, I think, is a perfect opportunity for the buzz and the razzmatazz to build in counties, and even from a PR point of view. And I know we used to do media days in build-up to finals as well. I think you need that sort of window for it to gain traction and gain momentum, even just around the country and nationally. And I think it's sad at the moment. I think that we're talking about All-Ireland hurling finals in August. I didn't realise, right, Jesus, the 18th of August, that's when usually the football semi-finals will be going on and things. So I think it's an opportunity last night. Don Lowe hit it there. I think the schools play a huge role in this, in the build up to matches and atmosphere. And like, I only have to think back to my own days and Marty Morrissey coming down doing an interview with me in Killarney many moons ago. But it's that sort of razzmatazz we're probably losing out on now because that window is so tight. And Peter's point about it was done more or less for the clubs in terms of helping their fixtures list. Look, if that research, what Peter said, is accurate there, it hasn't made a huge impact in it. And at the end of the day, guys, there's only two counties in the All-Ireland football and hurling finals, so it's not going to have that much of a detrimental effect to fixtures in those counties.
Do any of you know somebody who likes it? I actually don't know anybody who...
No, probably not.
No. But the point I was just going to make there is... One of the problems that counties have is that county managers exert too much control over their club fixtures. They don't let lads play games. And this is why we have what we have now in April and September, club months. A lot of us don't agree with what Frank Murphy said over the years or did, but he stood up at annual Congress when this was being debated back in 2017 and said, this is going to penalise counties like Cork that run an effective fixture programme. And that's exactly what's happened. Mm. And Don Logue, I'm sure, can back that up because he's actually still playing club hurling down there. He'll see how it's changed. It's up to county boards to run their fixture programme properly through the summer as best they can, not let the county manager just say, you can't see your clubs can't see their players for a month or months on end. If that happened, it would ease the fixture schedule nationally so much. But I don't think there's a will to make that happen.
It's a one that often intrigued me, right? And this is no disrespect to Wicklow. I actually have one very good friend up there now that probably won't be impressed with this, right? But
are you about to agree with Frank Murphy here?
what is the problem in Wicklow, for example, with the fixtures?
Waterford footballers. Right. Waterford football is almost always annually the last championship finished.
There you go. That's exactly my point. County boards need to get their house in order in terms of that. But and what we're seeing now is exactly like you say, as a result of that.
This is a 3-year trial, isn't it?
It is a 3-year. Yeah. So next year is the third year. Yeah. Both for all of these things, the Super 8s, the provincial hurling championships as round robins, and the earlier All Ireland.
There'll be a lot of voting to be done, won't there? All right. So then nobody and Colm, you don't know anyone who likes the August dates either, no?
No, I think anybody I talk to, and particularly around Kerry, it's Ireland football final date in particular, it's a September date, and that's where it should belong.
Yeah, okay, that's pretty strong.
And where's the rugby ball should be made in a proper shape? Let's call a spade.
Yeah, that's agreed, 100%. They're too busy renting out their holiday homes in August in Kerry to focus on All-Ireland.
Another topic, it emerged quietly after Dublin's game last weekend that Dermot Connolly is back in with the Dublin squad. Colm Cooper, you think this is a real plus for Dublin?
I do, Des, and I think it's hilarious how Jim Gavin just delivered it so nonchalantly into Dublin GAA TV. I have to say, I got a good laugh. I was on my own looking at this and I had a little chuckle to myself saying, this is hilarious. Here's a guy who was going to Boston only a few weeks ago. Didn't work out for whatever reasons. We were kind of told only a couple of months ago that what Jim was saying, that the door was open, but we were all kind of quietly hearing that it wasn't going to work out. And here Jim just drops in that, oh yeah, Dermot is back training with us, like, you know, thinking that there would be no response to this. But it's hilarious. Look, it is a big addition to Dublin. I didn't see it coming. My own opinion on it was I feared that Dermot's career was over. I thought he's so much more to give. He's only 32 years old. Probably one of the best footballers I've played against. I've no doubt in saying that, in terms of just balance, poise, positional play, scoring. Even if you watch him at St. Vincent's, we talked about leaders and bringing guys and making fellas better around him. He has all that. So, look, it's been a very strange one. The fact that he's just kind of parachuted in. I did hear rumours that he was back training a couple of months ago, but it was never really confirmed. So we didn't really know what was going to go on. So, look, what does it mean for Dublin in 2019? For me, it certainly reaffirms them as hot favourites to land the five in a row. Look, they have so many game changers in their squad, and yet here they probably have the most influential one of all. We know the influence he made against Mayo a few years ago. So, look, it just strengthens their hands so much. So, but you just have to love the way that Jim Gavin can just drop this in. He's just such a clever guy in how he does. And the funny thing about this guy is we might even see Dean McConnelly playing a minute of championship.
But that's could we talk about that? Do you think he can parachute him into even the 26th?
It would be a phenomenal turnaround, Peter, because I think a guy who's kind of not played in 2 years in championship football at the pace, it'd be a sensational turnaround for him to come in and, I suppose, for him to perform and dominate and in the way we know he did in the past. I think it'd be serious. But I just wonder, is this a big smokescreen for Dublin just to take the focus off the rest of the team and the squad? And maybe we'll all look at us talking about it now. The journalists will be talking about it. You could be sure next weekend when Jim is doing an interview after the match, it'll probably be the first thing that the interviewer will want to ask him. It'll be interesting to see how he reacts to that one. But look, he's a master tactician. I think this, I can't figure out is there real substance behind this that we're going to see him playing championship? Because in my opinion, Dermot Connolly is one of these unbelievable players that can play anywhere from number 8 to 15, anywhere in those positions. So can he add something? He definitely can. But are Dublin really serious about this? I'm not convinced yet. But you have to give to Jim Gavin, his poker face has come out again, and it's just a difficult one to read. And it's just added a bit of spice to the whole things. And this is all in the middle of the Super 8s, and maybe on the back of Dublin not having one of their better performances last weekend, even though we know they won comfortably. It's just fascinating to see how this saga continues. And just when you think that Dearman's career is over, this happens. So it's something that I'm going to look forward to watching over the next couple of weeks. It'll be amazing to see if he gets game time. I still can't make up my mind whether he will or he won't.
But Bernard Brogan has been in the squad and isn't making the 26.
This is it. Who does he... Of the forwards against Cork, Paddy Andrews, Kevin McMenamin, Owen O'Gara, Dean Rock and Paddy Small. They were the forwards on the bench against Cork. Does he drop one of those? They're guys that have been on the bench, on the panel, working hard for 2 years. They'd feel very hard done by.
To be fair to Jim Gavin, guys, the sentiment doesn't come into it either.
True.
Yeah.
I couldn't picture him bringing him in if there was no chance he thought he could add something.
Yeah.
I just couldn't picture it. But it's bizarre that he's brought him in. Like, what, he wasn't good enough 3 weeks ago, now he's good enough?
Well, he wasn't going to be in the country 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, but surely he would have been in the country if he was being selected.
Yeah. But what Colin was saying there about how Jim just dropped it into conversation, the way it works after matches in Croke Park, I was there, so they're done in various rooms. There's a TV and radio room, then they do Dubs TV somewhere else, and then they come in to meet the print online media, which I'd be part of. And he'd done the previous ones. He came to us, I think we were last, and you know, we were asking about who's available the next day that wasn't and so on, and he was talking about injuries and one thing and another. He didn't mention Dermot Connolly, and it was the first time all year I'd say that he wasn't asked about Dermot Connolly, because we were sick of asking
times,
him
yeah.
And we knew we'd get the same polite answer that the door is always open, so we didn't bother asking him. So that's our error. Mm-hmm. But he did the Dublin TV thing and he wasn't asked about it, he just dropped it in unprompted. And like, Jim is a clever man, he
knows
the media.
Managing the
of course, because
the
he knew if he'd mentioned it to us it would have been frenzy.
That he made it in that fashion to their own television station kind of is a good pointer of how the whole Dublin set up, how professional, how savvy it is.
That's what you're, but and that's what's happening now. Liverpool TV, Man United TV, that's where it's all going. Don Logue, what did you make of it?
I think, in addition to everything that's been said there, it's just for himself. Like, I know he's an elite sports person. Love watching him as a footballer. He was a good hurler as well, from what I saw of him, right? But like 2 years out, no matter who you are, it's a huge challenge to come back. You know, I was at the game last Saturday night in Croke Park, and whilst I thought it was a very good performance by Cork, and the scoreline was cruel on them, and maybe if that goal, the goal especially before half time, I thought was a real dagger. Like in the Dublin attack, some of their players are exceptional, and it's those exceptional players, I think, that are making the difference continuously.
It's possible for a player to come back after 2 years out, as you will know. Brian Corcoran, he was 2.5 years out when he came back from Cork in 2004. So, you know,
The league you're talking, Peter. You're talking like it's guys like that that are just at the very top. But it's a challenge, and for me, that's the, like, I'd love to see him doing it. I'd love to see him out there in an All Ireland final and, you know, performing, because I think it'd just illustrate the great athlete that he is.
He is playing away with his club.
He played a couple of weeks last week, didn't he?
Am I right in thinking none of you think he'll see game time?
Oh, I think he will.
You think he will see game time?
Yeah.
There's only three games left, guys.
We mentioned the subs there, that Dublin having the forward line. Like, Dean Rock came on and played very well, and I think he'll be pushing the next day out. But could you say that Dean McConnelly isn't as good or better footballer than the rest of the guys on the bench?
Oh, this is it, and he is a game changer.
Dave McConnelly of 3 years ago is better, but that, you know, we don't know now.
I think it's interesting for guys who've been the stars, like Bernard Brogan was national star, biggest star.
Footballer of the Year, 2010.
Yeah, and to be still in the squad and then not making the 26, that's tough on a fella who has been at the top. Don Logue, you've been in that situation.
Yeah, it's a fair point, Des, and I can't actually remember when I was now, to be honest.
No, I mean you've been part of a squad
I remember when Jimmy was giving me my P45 for want of a better description, that you know, I remember saying to him that, look, which will just let me back in the squad anyway, and I'll fight away for my position. But he said, I just don't think that I can't see you being in the dressing room and not being a player. I don't think it'd actually be good for the dressing room for you to be in that position. So maybe that's just another perspective to give.
That's interesting. And how did you take that?
I actually said, if you made me third or fourth choice, because he asked me, he said, how would you feel about being, how would you feel about being sub? I said, I've no problem, bring me back as sub, and I'll go for it. I said, bring me back as third or fourth choice, but just not let me back into the ring. But I understood where he was coming from as well. I mightn't have been as understanding at the time as I am now, right? but I just think it's another perspective on that discussion that you're bringing up there, Des.
Colm, how did your career inter-county end?
For the majority of my time, I was playing nearly. I was starting in all the matches, but I know the year I came back after doing my cruciate, I started the first championship match, and I was dropped for a Munster final in Killarney, which was a real dint to my ego, I suppose, if you want to call it. And Jesus, of all the games we dropped for Cork and Killarney, I was kind of thinking to myself, and I just wasn't playing well enough. And at the time, you can be very selfish to your own needs and saying, Jesus, after all the commitment I've given to Kerry for 10 or 15 years. I remember Eamon Fitzmaurice and having a chat with him, and look, you just weren't going well enough at the time, and that's part of it. And I think, as Don Logue said, at the time you mightn't be too appreciative of it, but I think when you look back and you're a small bit wiser, you understand why these things happen. So,
and Eamon was a friend of yours, wasn't he?
I played with Eamon and soldiered with him for 5 or 6 years, so it probably wasn't the easiest conversation for him to have either, but that's why he's in the job. That's you, and you live or die by your decisions. We went on and I think we drew that day and we won the replay, but that's what managers do. They make big calls, and like, I don't have any animosity about it. You just get on with it. But when you're used to playing, it's tough days when you're told to sit down and you're kind of not part of it. And that happens. So many players, and regardless of what quality player or you're not a quality player, everyone is told to sit down every so often, and it's not a nice thing, but that's part of sport. But I think that's what the Dubs have and Jim Gavin has, and it's probably a bit easier for Jim Gavin in terms of he's got so much quality around him. He can tell different players that, like, he's told Dean Rock now in early stages of the championship he's not playing, he could be back in. He's just got such a rich vein of talent around him, it's a little bit easier for him to do it, and probably because there's so much talent there, players are a little bit more appreciative of it.
And it's an interesting one you raised there, Colm, around that the managers, it being a tough job for the managers as well. I actually remember I was going to the States the next day with Pat Gilroy, and it'd be considered Pat a good friend, and I told him there was very few other people knew that I'd been drafted at that stage, and he said that one of the toughest jobs that he had was having that conversation with senior players. And again, I know even in my own head that helped me with that perspective, because you're so selfish when you're a player, and you need to be a top player. You have to have that selfish, you have to be both selfish and selfless as well. But when it comes to the team, but I think it's just an interesting one that Cullum raises there, that it's a very tough conversation for a manager to have also. And I remember when Pat said that to me, it did click something in my head also.
But Donald Cullum had the advantage. He came back in and saved the world for Eamon Fitzmaurice. Isn't that right?
Not quite, Diz. That's not how I remember it anyway.
I thought that's how you describe it. Yeah. Eamon Fitzmaurice is actually on the Sunday game on Sunday night, so there's another talking point for us. And Conor McManus is on in the afternoon for the live games. How will they go, by the way? How do you think they'll go, Cullum, at the weekend? Kerry Donegal's the big one, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a huge game, and it's going to be a great benchmark for both teams of exactly where they're at. I think I was a little bit cautious of Kerry last weekend in Killarney, I thought, after the two defeats, but what a very, very strong performance they gave in Killarney. So I think look, it's a toss of a coin between Kerry and Donegal. I suppose I said if Kerry beat Mayo last weekend, I felt that they would have the confidence to go up and beat Donegal. So I don't see any massive reason to change there. It wouldn't be a massive surprise if Donegal beat Kerry. And I think it'll go down to the last day anyway. But I think in the other one, I think Mayo, I don't think Meath, I think, are at the level of the other teams in the group, so I think Mayo will beat Meath this weekend, even though all the injuries seem to be adding up for Mayo at this stage.
Saturday night, there were reports, Colm, just on that, Owen Bon Gallagher of Donegal has broken his ankle in training.
I heard that this morning, yeah. Kerry, that he appears to be out. He'd be a huge loss because he's been one of the finds for them in the last 2 years. But look, they have a lot of quality. They've shown that they have strength and depth now, where maybe they didn't have it maybe 3 or 4 years ago. So they'll find a solution there, I'm sure. On Saturday night, I think, look, Dublin will obviously be very, very strong. I think they'll probably be hurting from the manner of their performance last week. Not so much the result, because they were very comfortable in the end. But I think they might put down a marker this weekend to say, and with the likes of James McCarthy getting game time last week and things like that, I think they'll be out to prove a point this weekend. So I think Roscommon mightn't be looking forward to that one too much, and there could be a big scoreline for the Dubs there. Tyrone and Cork is probably a very interesting one. It's probably outside of the Kerry Donegal one, it's the one I'm looking forward to most over the weekend. Cork have certainly hit a rich vein of form in terms of performance-wise. I mentioned that they look very organised when I saw them in the Munster final. They backed that up last week in terms of the performance against Dublin. Just ran out of gas. And I think maybe Don Lowe talked about the goal maybe before half-time being pivotal. I think they were still probably in the game a little bit until the goalkeeper went short with a kick-out and it went the wrong way. But look, those things happen. But I think if they can recuperate very quickly, I think they can make it busy for Tyrone. It's a big ask for them to turn them over. So I would still be slightly fancying Tyrone. But Cork, for me, is certainly proving to everybody else that they're certainly on the right path to rehabilitation.
Brilliant. Okay, well, we'll be looking forward to those and coverage, of course, here on RTÉ over the weekend. Well, look, at my thanks to our panel this afternoon, to Wes Liddy, editor of the Sunday Game, to Don Lowe Cusick, to Cullum Cooper, and as ever, Peter Sweeney. We'll be back with you next week. Enjoy the coverage of the matches. Until then, from all of us here, bye-bye.